Yes. So today I'm really going to tell you about how it works and a few things about the exam. Now, I think two of you were here last year and already followed these classes. Charlotte and one more person. Who was the other? Yeah. Oh, two more. I wasn't watching, was I? I wasn't watching you very carefully, was I? Okay. So we have four people who weren't there. Okay. Well, it will be a little different from last year, although of course there will be a certain amount of repetition. So you know, you've probably forgotten most of it anyway, haven't you? Yes. Thank you. Okay. So how does this work? Well. So, of course, this is for the orals, and the question of the voyages of James Cook, or the journals of James Cook, to be precise, can be brought up in one of two ways. It can be the leçon, which is a kind of oral dissertation, essentially, or it can be the commentary. It can come up for one or the other, but not both. Although, of course, you might find yourself suddenly with either Obama or the BBC. Yeah, so it's the Obama, the BBC, or Cook. You don't know until you get there. Now it's a very exciting subject. I began 3 years ago. I knew about as much about James Cook as you do, which I mean the people who were not here last year. I mean, which is not a huge amount, am I right? And a very, very exciting subject because it brings up how the British Empire was built, how Australia built its national mythology, and New Zealand, 18th century science and worldviews, and post-colonialism, and you know what to do when it's no longer thought appropriate to it's wonderful, the British Empire is getting bigger every year, this is great. That's obviously no longer the atmosphere today. And so what do you do with history when it works like that? Those are the sort of questions we come up with. Now, it's going to be a little bit different from last year because I'm going to make the most of the fact that this rather unfriendly virus is causing us so much trouble. So normally, in a normal year, we would have 2.5 hour classes in the classroom, which when you would already have done 5 hours on other subjects before. Now, obviously, this is not ideal for learning because your heads might explode, and mine too. And so, because we can't do them live anyway, I'm organising it differently. So what's going to happen is you're going to have six classes like this. Each one will last 1 hour. If you bring questions, I am happier because I don't have to prepare so much if you bring questions. But in general, you know, some sort of live class. And then there will be 9 hours, that is 18 half-hour videos, like the ones I did for the BBC. And I consider that's a good compromise. First of all, you only have to listen for an hour. Secondly, of course, you can put the teacher on pause when it's on a video. This is a dream of every student. Just switch him off, you know, click. He can't talk anymore. Ah, doesn't he look stupid? He's stuck like that. Yeah, great. Wonderful stuff. So that's what we're going to do. So this means that if you have questions, you can send me an email and I will deal with them in class. I won't be making you a martyr in front of the class. Look at this stupid question that Charlotte sent me. No, I won't do that, I promise, okay? I only say Charlotte because I know she feels safe here. Okay, so what is the programme then? Well, I have here a thingy to get us started. Non, c'est pas ça, c'est... Il faut dire partager votre écran. Partager l'écran. Partager l'écran. Yes, although I would like to partager l'écran, but I don't have the écran that I want to partager, so I might have to bring that back up. Yes, and then go back there and try again. I'm getting gradually better than this without actually getting to the point of being good. Right, okay, can you see that now? Can you see that now?
Yes.
Thank you. And you may leave your, unless you have dogs or something, you may leave your thing on. Right, so that's me. Right, there you go. And although I think you have me not so big, but that's just life. You'll have to do with me not so big, because I don't know how to make myself any bigger right now. Okay. So this is my first class, which is Captain Cook Superhero. Which brings me back to the song, because when you listen to that song, which said how wonderful it was that Captain Cook went to Australia and he was a brave man and he discovered Australia, made the British Empire bigger, well, you can either think, oh, this is a nice, fun song to sing with children, or you can think, ah, yes, those were the good old days when the British had an empire. Or it can make you want to be sick if you think of the British Empire as something that makes you want to be sick, as I do. So, you know, you get a choice. And certainly this will come up again and again. The question of James Cook is extremely controversial. Just to give you an idea, I have some friends in Canberra, in the capital of Australia. And there was a big exhibition there at the museum, a free exhibition, a big one, Captain James Cook. 2 years ago. And my friends are left-wing people, you know, generally sort of socialist sort of people. And I asked them, I said, you know, did anybody go to that exhibition? I want to talk to you about it. And they looked at me as if I had insulted them. Yeah. As if I had said to you, you know, oh, did you go to see that great exhibition about the wonderful Maréchal Pétain? So, if you were left-wing. And I'm not joking. They really thought it was an insult that I thought that they had gone to an exhibition about James Cook. And on the contrary, I put on the blog this morning an extract from Australian television where they explain how wonderful and brave and enlightened and civilised James Cook was, and how horrible it is that people today are pulling him down and saying bad things about him. So that's the context, and it's tremendously important for you to take the measure of that. Now, what students like to do is they like to say, well, a long time ago, everybody thought James Cook was a hero, and then they realised that there was always injustice, and so today we're somewhere in the middle. So that is not the correct response. In fact, from the point of view of the aggregation, nobody cares if you think that James Cook is wonderful or horrible. What they care is that you understand why he makes people on both sides so angry. So your job, obviously, is not to defend James Cook, and your job is not to attack James Cook, but more importantly, your job is not to say, James Cook had some good points and some bad points, and so he will have a conclusion somewhere in the middle. That's really, it's probably the wrong question. You know, the big question is, Captain Cook, hero or villain? And it's probably just the wrong question, because what individuals did, you know, it's not so important. What we're interested in is, what were the forces that made Cook's expeditions happen? In what context? What were people trying to do? What did they understand? What did they not understand? What was it like? What did it mean to the English? What did it mean later to the Australians? What did it mean to the Aboriginals? And what does the debate today mean? So really, your own personal opinion, to be frank, nobody cares. But in particular, it doesn't matter. If in your essay somebody can see that you have more of this opinion or more of that opinion, they don't mind. The jury is not against you for this reason. As long as you show that you understand why people have this position and why people have this position. That's the history side of it. Okay, so what do I have here? Now, of course, you will be unsurprised to hear that a lot of what happens will be here on the blog. Now, all through the last year and a half, I have been putting up links on the blog about James Cook, because this is the second year I've done it, and there are now 62 of them. And you don't have time to look at them all, because that's too many, 62, okay? So they're there. If you want to, just tap in the search box in the top left-hand corner, James Cook, and browse through them, that's fine. But what I'm going to do in the classes is, every class, I will recommend 3 or 4 of them. Because, you know, if I recommend 62, it's too many. So that's what I'm going to do. And as I come across new ones, I will be doing that as well. So for today, I would just like to recommend three of them. I know some of last year's bunch have looked at them already. So this is one. This is a YouTube video. I like to recommend videos because I know you have so many books to read, and of course you will be reading books. But there we go. This one, which is a very easy introductory video from a fairly conventional point of view. What James Cook did. But it's good at the beginning to make sure that, you know, you've got them in order. The first expedition is before the second one, and the third one is afterwards. Okay, you got that? Good. Okay, so you can see here, Time Watch Cook the Man. If you search in YouTube for Time Watch Cook the Man, that will be enough to get you there. Indeed, in YouTube there are about 150 videos about Cook, and I will be recommending about 15. Because there's also a lot of bad ones. In fact, I've watched almost all of them. There was even one that showed that by studying Cook's journals, you can prove that the world is flat. I'm not joking. There are some bizarre people out there on YouTube. Second one here, and although I do put a lot of suggestions on the blog, if I use a word like indispensable, yeah, it means it's important, yeah? So I think in the 62 posts, I probably said indispensable 5 times, no more. Yeah. This is a French historian writing Le Navigateur. So il faut chercher Le Navigateur James Cook en Polynésie. And she has written 3 books on 18th century voyages. Yes, and she's very clear. And it's all in French, so you know what's not to like. The beginning in particular is good. Later it becomes a little bit descriptive, but obviously descriptive is not bad in itself, but we want to go further. And finally, is there somebody trying to get in there? Oh, no, I think we're okay. And finally, the last one for... Oh, no, that's what we're doing. And finally, this one. And this is an article from The Guardian, and you will be able to find it... If you just look, at Maori tribe bands replica. If you search on Google for Maori tribe bands replica, that will be enough. Okay, so two videos and a Guardian article. Yeah, that's enough recommending for today. This last one shows you something of what's happening now, because of course the reason that James Cook is on the program of the Agrégation is because it is. Exactly 250 years. That's why, yes. And it will be the 250th anniversary until 2026, because in 1776, spoiler, Captain Cook gets killed in Hawaii. Sorry about the spoiler. It is going to continue to be controversial. Now, strangely enough, it has been a little less controversial in this last year because almost all the celebrations have been cancelled because of the COVID. Australia is fascinating because they've had a long lockdown, and so far they've had like 300 or 500 deaths in total. That's all. They my Australian friends write me emails and say, it's terrible, there are 5 cases in our town. And I'm like, you know what? Oh, I wish I lived in Australia, you know. Anyway, what can you do? The other thing that you need to know about the exam side of it is this, which was written by the president, the chair of the jury of the Agrégation, and they said that exceptionally, for the text commentary, the only documents that will be used for the text commentary is from... Oh, you can't see it, can you? If I put it in front of me there. It's actually from the journals. Now, that's unusual. Usually, the text commentary can come from many different places. But this year, for this, it's definitely going to come from this. This is James Cook, the journals. And the edition is Penguin Classics. And I looked this morning. It cost, second-hand, it cost €9. So, you know, I think you can afford it. I hope you can afford it. And this is James Cook, the journals in the edition by Penguin Classics. Now, it's edited by Philip Edwards. Now, the reason it's important that it is the edition of Penguin Classics is because this edition is only 650 pages long. Only. Because the full journals are at least three times as long. So it's very nice of them not to ask you to read the full journals, isn't it? The other thing, and this is one of the reasons I wanted to have our first class fairly soon on the 13th of January and not after the written, is because you have to read this. You have to read this book. Yep, yep. Now, a little bit of, first of all, it's not as much fun as The Lord of the Rings. I'm sorry. Yeah. It's quite challenging. It's not exciting on every page, is it, Charlotte? No. No. Because it's a little bit technical. Now, as time goes on, that's good. People are asking me questions. I'll just check people. But it's much more fun than Henry James. Oh, my God. That might be true. Okay. I'm afraid I haven't read the Henry James. And certainly, I would not dare give an opinion on anything that my colleagues are working on. My life is too dear to me. How to read it? First of all, begin with the third exhibition, and then the second, and then the third. I know that sounds stupid. But in fact, when he wrote the first expedition, the journal of the first expedition, he was writing it for himself, for his boss, the Admiralty. That was about it. By the time he was writing the third expedition, a few years later, he knew that there would be hundreds of thousands of readers. He knew that you could publish it and it would sell a lot and make a lot of money as well. But these journals, when they were the different forms in which they were sold, this was big money. He went into the Arctic Circle for the first time. Nobody had ever done it before. This was very, very exciting for people. Although, of course, you're talking about the middle classes, because the farmers, the peasants, can't read in the 18th century. It's just beginning. London is getting bigger and more people can read, but it's fairly slow. Yeah. That is to say that the third expedition is written for a general audience, and so it's much easier to read. So I recommend that you begin with the third and then go backwards. Okay. Yes. What else do I have to say about this? Okay. So that's the main things. So what is the structure of my classes? Well, here it is, and I will eventually send you the link to the PowerPoint as well, but not until I've finished it. So I've got a series of sections. First of all, the superhero, because I think that the reason we're talking about Cook, and the reason we're studying Cook, is not really because of what Cook did, because he wasn't the first European to visit America, to visit Australia, for example. It was some Dutch guy. In fact, when James Cook arrived in Australia, it already had a name. Do you remember what it was called, Charlotte? New Holland. It was called New Holland. Yeah. So he obviously wasn't the first one there. Really, the reason that we are studying him is because of what he means, in particular, to Australia and New Zealand today. Now, of course, we're going to study what he did, but you know, there were other explorers: Francis Drake, Bougainville, the French explorer, and frankly, Bougainville's books are a lot more exciting. I'm glad that you read it already. That's excellent. Excellent. Yes, the naval indications are essential, but I will be talking about those, don't worry. I don't mean you need to learn them off by heart. You don't have to learn them by heart. But congratulations on reading it anyway. You will enjoy the classes more because you're reading it anyway. After the superhero, the century, the 18th century, what was this century? And we have to get away from this enormous condescension of posterity, as E.P. Thompson would say. We're in the 21st century, and we think society in the 21st century moves really fast, and it's really exciting, lots of stuff happening. What happened in the 18th century before the French Revolution? Nothing happened. Jane Austen's characters wandered around falling in love with each other, and that was about it, wasn't it? And so it's very, very important to reconstruct the 18th century. Things were moving very fast. The first Industrial Revolution was already beginning in Britain, especially after 1760. The first Industrial Revolution was canals, banks. Canals and banks, mostly. Banks, like financial institutions, banks. Extremely important for industry, because, of course, if you don't have banks, then you just have the individual capitalist entrepreneur with his money. If you have a bank, you get the organisations. Oh, let's have 100 people. They can have shares. So tremendously, the financial infrastructure to build big industry. And canals for transport. Before the railway, the canal was wonderful, because if you have to take stuff from Manchester to Liverpool, or from Leeds to Liverpool, you have a choice. You can put it on a cart and get a horse to pull it, or you can put it on a barge on the canal and get a horse to pull the barge along the canal. I don't know if you've ever done this, but the horse can pull 20 times more if it's on water. That's 20 times more. You've cut the cost of transport by 20. That transforms the entire economy. Because before the first Industrial Revolution, you've got a man in a village and he makes tables. He can make a table every week. He makes chairs as well. He can make one every week. It takes him a week. And one of his friends says, hey, you know, I've got a new method, a little bit of a machine, and it will, you can make two tables every week. And what does the man reply? He says, why would I want to make two tables every week? There's only 5 villages I can get to, and everybody has a table. I don't need your machine. See, if you don't have transport to transport the products, then you're not going to be interested in improving efficiency and technology. Number three, the empire, of course. What was James Cook doing? Was he going out to explore the world in the name of science? Was he building the British Empire? Was it a bit of both? For the science, going out on a ship was extremely dangerous in the 18th century. You tended to die or get shipwrecked. You know the stories written in the 18th century, Robinson Crusoe. They were popular stories because people were really frightened of being stranded on an island and having to survive. It was a real thing. The horrible story of Tromelin. This is a French story where their ship went down, and it was a slave ship, and they just had enough wood to build a raft or something to save some people. And so all the white people went off and get saved, and they left all the slaves behind them. And they eventually sent a ship to 40 years later to help them, and there were like 5 left. It's a fabulous story. Sorry. Hello, sweetheart. Poor daughter just finished exams. The science, the ship, the man, the crew. The first voyage, the second voyage, the third voyage. First Nations reception. Okay, so that's my structure. However, I should say it's not at all 13 equal sections, because the first voyage, the second voyage, and the third voyage are the 3 very long sections, and the others are much, much smaller. Is the answer to this. And what I'm probably going to do, what I'm intending to do, is in the live classes, 1, questions and answers, 2, the superhero, the century of the empire, and in the videos, the first voyage, the second voyage, the third voyage. That's to start like that and see how it goes. Yes, and so you will be building it up as you go along. Okay, and in fact, we don't, our second live class is on the 10th of February, so I have a bit of time to do some videos on the first voyage, I hope. Okay, if you have any questions, you may, because there are not many of you, you may talk, but you may also write stuff in the chat. Let me just close it for the moment. So let me have a little look. That let me begin to look. I've got half an hour. Let me begin to look at the superhero. And here is the word that you absolutely have to know. Hagiography. I don't know if you knew this word, but if you're going to do any history, you need to know this word. Very, very important word. It means the lives of the saints. There's a whole tradition. First of all, the Catholics from the 10th century or even before, they used to write lives of the saints. And it would be the story of the life of Saint Anthony, the life of so-and-so. Later on, the Protestants in England, they wrote, you know, the lives of the martyrs, about the wonderful lives of these Protestants who the nasty Catholic Queen Mary burnt at the stake. And these books, their aim is to show you a model for your life. And these books, the lives of the saints, the saint is perfect on page one, and perfect on page two, and perfect on page three, and perfect on page four. And we use the word today, hagiography, to talk about a very admiring book about someone, or a description of someone that represents the perfect as perfect, or much better than they really are. Poor old James Cook has been a victim of a tsunami of hagiography. Well, that's a bit of a mixed metaphor, isn't it? A tsunami of hagiography. There are 1,000 books which say how wonderful he was in every way. And so this is the main danger. This is the main danger, because when you've got all this... Now, of course, that doesn't mean that you have to think he was a horrible person. That's not necessary. But certainly, we can't start from that he was wonderful in every way. And I think... My own personal opinion is that we will come up with the question that is, was he wonderful or horrible? Sorry, I'm a historian. You know, I'm not a journalist for Voici. You know, it's just the wrong question. It's just the wrong question. Like, you know, how nice was Hitler to his cat? Who cares? It doesn't matter. So here are a couple of examples. These are just recent books. These are not books which I recommend. I haven't read them, but just to give you an idea of how he's presented, this is today, 2019, just last year, Peter Moore's Sunday Times bestseller, My History Book of the Year. And ever, the ship and the attitude that changed the world, to boldly go where no man has gone before, da 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 da, etc. Yeah? So... we can see the ship and the attitude that changed the world. Endeavour. Now, this is the name of his first ship, Endeavour. And it's rather a difficult word to translate, but it certainly suggests efforts, brave, honourable efforts, never giving up, being tireless and standing. You know, the Endeavour, it's the ideal of the disruptive entrepreneur. The small capitalist, the ideal small capitalist, you know, think of the founder of Amazon or Facebook or something, who fought against the terrible situation to become a multimillionaire. Or at least that's what he says. And so you can see, so they're saying not just that this ship changed the world, that's probably a matter of fact. The ship changed the world. It was the first European ship in New Zealand. And after that, they decided to occupy New Zealand, and the Maoris had their reaction. That changed the world. But the attitude that changed the world, you know, it's a slightly nostalgic. If only we had those values that led James Cook to go where no man had gone before. It said, there's the voyages of Captain James Cook. The illustrated account of 3 epic voyages. Now, here I need to say a little word about vocabulary, because you look at the word voyage... And of course it comes from the French, but it's not at all a neutral word in English. If you take a famous French book, Voyage au Centre de la Terre, this is translated into English as Journey to the Centre of the Earth. You know, journey is the neutral word. A voyage is a grand romantic journey, probably with pirates or dragons. Yeah. No dragons in James. Don't get mixed up. No dragons in. Cut the dragons. So voyages. So the fact that in English people choose to use this word voyages is not neutral. And really, in my opinion, a historian should say expeditions. Because expedition, that's a fact. Whereas a voyage is a brave and wonderful and amazing thing. That's why you never say, a murderous voyage or a tragic voyage. It's always a glorious voyage. And this is one of the things that I have to point out. Now, I hope that I don't permanently come over as a sort of dangerous Islamo-gauchiste, which I am, but I don't want to appear that way all the time. But it has to be said that the stories of James Cook are very often tinged with white supremacy, which I know you know something about. Because, for example, if you search on Google for brave James Cook, you find many thousands of pages about how brave James Cook was. Maybe he was, I don't know. But if you imagine the Maori, when James Cook arrived in New Zealand, the first encounter, of course James Cook had guns and the Maori did not, and I think two of them were shot dead. And the following day, which must have appeared to be by magic weapons to the Maori, and the following day they attacked the Maori. And no history book I have seen has ever said the Maori were very brave to attack James Cook, who had these very impressive weapons. So there's always a sort of tinge. I'm not trying to say that they know that they're defending the white empire, but there's always a tinge of subjectivity in this. So what happened to Captain Cook? What happened to James Cook? Well, so I just have to scroll down because I haven't even started on my notes yet. Yes, one of the mysteries. Yes, and indeed, one of the difficulties is that the First Nations, the Maori or the Hawaiians or the Australian Aboriginals, when James Cook published his journals, the representatives of these people had no way to reply and say, oh, well, no, it wasn't exactly like that, because the European culture was a written culture, and the First Nations culture was an oral culture, so there was no writing, and obviously writing is tremendous power. Now, so Cook could read and write, good for him, but of course he couldn't read and write because the British civilization was so wonderful. Writing was discovered in North Africa. James Cook had rifles with gunpowder. These are very powerful. But it wasn't British civilization. It was invented in China. And they had a compass, which allowed you to know where north was. Extremely useful. Again, this wasn't British civilization. One of the reasons that James Cook arrived with much better technology is that Britain is not very far from an enormous continent, Eurasia, with 100 different peoples who had been exchanging technology for many centuries. However, the Aboriginals had been alone in Australia for 60,000 years. 60,000 years. This is not the case of the Maori. The Maori had arrived quite recently. In fact, the Maori see themselves as immigrants to New Zealand. I can't remember when they arrived, a few hundred years before Cook, no more. This is one of the reasons that the politics of James Cook in Australia are completely different. I don't mean what he did. I mean today, the way that people talk about James Cook in Australia is completely different from the way that people talk about James Cook in New Zealand, which is fascinating, but a little bit complicated because, you know, I mean, we normally think of New Zealand as, you know, well, it's a bit of Australia, really, isn't it? You know, with a slightly different accents, yeah? If you meet somebody and you think they have an Australian accent, you must say to them, oh, you're from New Zealand, aren't you? Because if they're Australian, they won't mind. And if they are if they're from New Zealand, you have made a friend for life. Yeah, so just a little trick there. In any case, here we are. You go to Sydney. Sydney, the biggest, a beautiful, beautiful city. And at the centre, in the enormous park, you see the biggest statue, and it is James Cook, and here he is with his servant showing it out. And what is it? It was erected in 1879, so 100 years afterwards, 100 years after Cook's expeditions, 103. And what is he saying? He's saying, we are Australia. I'm here. We are Australia. Now, of course, he's not saying it for James Cook. He's saying it for the Australians of 1879. but it's also saying, you are not Australia, the Aboriginal peoples and so on. And indeed, the whole story of Aboriginal Australia, Aboriginals did not have the right to vote for 100 years after everybody else had the right to vote. Yeah, it was a very, very extremely rigid discriminatory system. Very, very similar to the south of the United States, if you want to have an idea what it looked like. That's what it says. Killed in such and such a place. I can't remember why. In Canberra, much later, 1970, 100 years later, a Canberra Memorial Fountain with a globe and a huge fountain. Notice something. We no longer see James Cook here. We no longer have the hero has disappeared. And it's the Endeavour, which is being commemorated, but we're not having the hero anymore. That's not an accident. This is 1870. 1970. It's a bit calm down a little bit. In England, where he was born, in England, in Yorkshire. And here is a statue to him, erected in 1912. This plaque is to commemorate the men who built the Whitby ships, the four ships used by Captain James Cook, and also the men who sailed with him on the greatest voyages of exploration of all time. When you make a statue, you don't say, this is the fourth greatest event of the century. Yeah, it's almost the greatest. Yeah, that's why you do it that way. Yeah, and celebrating the fire. And at the end, a slogan, to strive, to seek, to find, and not to yield, to boldly go where no one has gone before, yeah? Au mépris du danger, avancer vers l'infini. That sort of thing. It's the Star Wars sort of thing. So there he is, the superhero, in London, in 1914. And here, very interesting, that the inscription says, he laid the foundation of the British Empire. That's what they're talking about. Oh, it's the Empire that's important. This has all become a little bit problematic, because, of course, in 1914... a very widespread opinion was that the British Empire is the best thing that has ever happened to the world. In 2021, it's not quite seen that way. In Hawaii, this is where he died. This is where he died in Hawaii. Again, almost 100 years after his death, a monument near this spot, Captain James Cook met his death. Hello, Death. I'm pleased to meet you. Oh, pleased to meet you too. James Cook met his death. An interesting monument in Hawaii in 1874. So somebody there thought it was important. And this is before Hawaii was annexed to the USA. So it's interesting thought to who was commemorating there. Now, the thing here really is to think about why did James Cook become such a superhero. I don't mean in himself. I mean for other people. This is essentially about Australia. Australians, everybody likes to have, every nation state likes to have heroes from the past. And in France, we have the French Revolution, you know, liberté, égalité, fraternité, at the front of every school. You know, it's a big deal, the French Revolution. So the French Revolution is France's founding myth. Now, remember what a myth is. A myth, when you say it's a founding myth, this does not mean it's not true. It means its importance in society is bigger than its truth. And indeed, the French Revolution is on the front of every school in the country, which is bigger than its real influence. That's why it's a founding myth. So what about the Australian founding myth? What are they going to do to have a founding myth? Well, they could look back to their presidents and their... Yes, at the end of the 19th century, in the middle of the 19th century, most of the British, the white British in Australia, were prisoners, criminals. It was a prison camp. And so the leaders of the colony were the prison governors, who were also, you know, pretty cruel people. You know, when you're a 19th century prison governor, you know, you're not really that nice to people. That's not the idea, yeah? And so, in some ways, the Australian nation state had a problem. Where are our heroes from the past? Well, we have this great prison governor from the end of when we were all criminals. It doesn't make a very good founding myth. And so they created, in the founding myth, James Cook. James Cook became the founding myth. Although he did not found Australia, he visited and then went home. And after he died, one of his friends said to the British government, oh, well, you know, You know, the French have formed a new prison in New Caledonia. Yeah? Well, we need a prison camp as well, don't we? I know just the place. Sydney. Oh, yes, I think the difference between New Zealand and Australia from the point of view today, we will definitely come back to that. It's very different. New Zealand today has worked very hard to include Maori culture into mainstream New Zealand. If I go to a university conference in New Zealand, which I never have, I would expect the first speaker to say in Maori, "Hello, welcome, I'm pleased to see you here, it's wonderful to be able to share this with you," and then continue in English to give his talk about history. This would be automatic in university circles to speak some Maori as a recognition of the importance of Maori culture. Now, there are a lot of things in Australia along these lines, but much, much less, yeah. Although Australia is a fascinating place. When you go to Australia, the first time I went to Australia, I went to a trade union meeting. And they began by saying, "We would like to recognise that this building is on the land of such and such a tribe, and we want to express our respect for the elders of this tribe in the past, in the present, and in the future." It's a kind of ritual, automatic thing that you say to recognise the importance of Aboriginal culture. And for Europeans like us, they go, "Wow, what on earth?" In Europe, we solved the problem differently. We just killed everybody when we arrived, you know. So it's no problem there. Okay. Let me see if I can find my... I'm in the wrong place here, yes. There you go. Even heroes today... Well, this is a picture of Clive of India. Clive built the British Empire in India, and it's a book about infortune soldiers. Basically, he just for a long time Britain controlled part of India, and then Clive came along and said, "Hey, we've got some really good guns. Let's go and steal the part next door." This is literally the case. He just occupied more and more of India. And he became the hero because he killed a lot of Indians and gained a lot of land. And the problem is that today, if you want a national hero, you know, people who killed a lot of Indians and stole a lot of land, it doesn't run as well as it used to do. Whereas James Cook came from an ordinary family, not a rich family, travelled around the world three times. Three is good for a fairy story, like the three bears, you know. Goldilocks and the three bears, yeah. And he died at the end defending his values and defending the values of the British Empire. It's a perfect fairy story. And that's where it comes from. And so the result is, here is Captain Cook's cottage from Yorkshire, England. But where is it? Anybody who was not here last year know where it is? In Australia, in Melbourne. Some rich Australian bought it in Yorkshire and took it over to Australia and rebuilt it. This is what you call a superhero, yeah? Wow. Cook's cottage in a public park in Melbourne, Australia. Cook's desk is preserved in the National Library in Canberra. Here is one of the great paintings of Cook's death, and you can see him nobly dying there. Oh, I'm dying. It's wonderful. 1795, 20 years after his death, yeah? 1860, this is before. This is earlier. This is 1860. C'est vrai ça? Je vais vérifier la date, mais c'est peut-être bon. But look at him. There he is, the English gentleman. Not the aristocrat, notice. Not the aristocrat, the bourgeois gentleman. Yeah? Which is important at the time. You know, the aristocrats in Britain in the 1860, yeah, that's correct. 100 years afterwards, yeah. So in the 19th century, the bourgeoisie, the industrial bourgeoisie, they're the powers in Britain. Aristocracy is old value. So here he is, not aristocratic. And he is controlling the world. And what does he carry? Not a gun. No. A telescope. With science and intelligence, he dominates the world. That's the image, of course, in the 19th century in England. 17th century, this is much earlier. is much earlier. And there he is being heroic and wonderful. And he's arriving at Botany Bay, first time he arrives in Australia. And I don't know if you can see there, but you can see that there are three of his soldiers who are getting their guns. In the distance, you can see the Aboriginals. And these three of his soldiers are getting their guns and say, let's go and get those Aboriginals. And Captain Cook said, no, no, we come in peace. This is what the technical term for this version of the story is, bollocks. Let's say that it's not true. Okay, so he's a great hero, and this is a proposed statue in London, never actually happened, and then we get the proposed statue in London, and even the French poet, 1782, so a few years after his death, toi, surtout brave Cook, qui chère à tous les cœurs, unis par les regrets, la France et l'Angleterre, toi qui, dans ces climats où le bruit du tonnerre nous a lancé, jadis triptolème nouveau, je ne sais pas ce que ça veut dire, apporter le coursier, la brebis, le taureau, le soc cultivateur, les arts de ta patrie et des grandes d'Europe, exploit la furie, ta voile en arrivant leur annoncer la paix aux aborigènes, et ta voile en partant le laisser des bienfaits. This is to say that the French imperialists loved him as well, yeah? Which was quite good to say that, 1782, let's say that England was never the favourite country of the French elite, and they were going to be at war for most of the next 30 years. But Cook is around the world. You can see him on the banknotes and on the postage stamps and on the coins and on the playing cards. Yeah, this is the playing cards, and I love this one. James Cook, discover Hawaii and get killed by the locals. The worst dad ever. In fact, almost all of his children were born when he was away, and I think three quarters of them died before he got back. So he gets worst dad ever. It's dead cool. And the safety matches and so on. But also, he could be a university or a fish restaurant or a university hospital or seafood steaks. Yes, seafood steaks, why not? But sometimes more important things. When the Americans did the space shuttles, they said, oh, let's get a name for the space shuttles. Let's name them after the ships of Captain Cook. So, you know, he has a certain... I would be extremely happy if after my death they name some spaceship after me. I think that's really cool. Yeah, as you imagine it. Yeah, I haven't done anything yet which would merit this, but you never know. I still have some time, a little time. What the fuck is that? Sorry. Excuse my French. Or you can have him as a model or a board game. However. Of course, not everybody is happy, and as the commemorations took place in the last few years, you found them oppositional. Let's not celebrate Captain Cook, because after he came, he gave the idea to bring the prison camps here, and after that, things got, frankly, not very good for the Aboriginals. And indeed, the story of... what life was like for the Aboriginals after the arrival of the Europeans is, let's say, it's not easy to be proud from the point of view of the Europeans, yeah. And here is another oppositional piece of work. You can see it's exactly the same painting, but you can see that Cook is presented as a pirate, just come to steal stuff. Things do change a little bit. Now, the debate, I was going to say the debates about Cook's heritage, but that's completely the wrong word, because it's not a debate, it's a fight. It's a row. I mean, people don't debate about it. They just say, you refuse to recognise that Captain Cook was the best, and they say, no, Cook was a mass murderer. You know, so it's not really a debate. It's a kind of row. But it has developed a little bit, and let's say that while 50 years ago, there were very few public voices saying, hey, stop this superhero bit, let's get more objective. These days there is. So look, here we have a children's book from 2008, a school book. Excuse me, Captain Cook, who did discover Australia? Now, I haven't read the book, but you can see that it's going to explain the importance of the people who were already there. Whereas to the British, Australia was defined as terra nullius. It's Latin, it's a technical term, terra nullius. It's nobody's land. And this was a very, very important concept. It's nobody's land, so we can take it. It's nobody's land, why? It's nobody's land because the Aboriginals are not really using agriculture. They're just moving from place to place and they're not living like us. This was the way that the English treated Ireland as well. They said, well, you know, the Irish don't deserve to have the land of Ireland because they're not efficient. They don't use irrigation properly. It would produce much more food if the English took it over. And so they took it over. This idea that those nations who have more technology deserve to dominate. And of course, as you saw a moment ago, then the children's song.
Day he left his home and sailed away. And he sailed and he sailed and he sailed till he came to Australia. And he named the place he landed Botany Bay. Captain Cook took a look and he said to his men, I think I'd better draw some maps so we'll find this place again.
I love that. Captain Cook took a look and then said to his men, I'd better draw some maps so we can find this place again. Although, there actually is a serious point there, and that is that Captain Cook was a remarkable mapper, cartographer, a remarkable cartographer, which is what he did before he went off three times around the world, before he was mapping in Canada, Newfoundland, to help the war against the French. Because if you're going to organise a naval war, having good maps is pretty important, yeah. Because if you don't, yeah. And interestingly enough, the mapping was rather political, because it's been suggested there's a, when he maps the whole of New Zealand, he goes all the way around New Zealand and he maps the whole of New Zealand. And there's a fascinating point about this, because the New Zealand is the two big islands, and then there's a tiny island just near the bottom island. And there's also some more, but there's the... and this tiny island at the bottom, when he drew his map, he drew it as a peninsula, as though it was not an island, but attached to the mainland. And it's been suggested recently that the reason he did this is that he didn't want the enemy, the French, to know there was an island, because it's a very useful militarily. And it seems impossible that he didn't notice it was an island, because he was an expert cartographer. So it seems that he drew an official map which gave false information for military reasons. One thing that everybody seems to forget about James Cook is he was a military man. He was a captain of the Royal Navy. Certainly a very smart guy, but also, you know, when you're a military man, you kind of do what you're told. Yeah, that's part of the deal, you know. So this kind of contradicts a little bit his image as a disruptive entrepreneur. The disruptive entrepreneur is the neoliberal hero, really, who works against competition, is imaginative, and wins. This is very important. The 19th century hero, or let's say the 18th century hero, was an aristocrat who inherited his lands and who did not work, who thought wonderful ideas, but it did not work. Working was for dirty people. But the 21st century hero is somebody who works and against the competition becomes a billionaire. And so that's why Captain Cook. And the last little bit of Captain Cook for today is this incredible sculpture, which I came across in Sydney Art Museum. It's called The English Channel. It's by Michael Parubre, him. And here it is close up. And it's just Captain Cook sitting on a table. So, now it's a piece of art, so it's not supposed to have one simple meaning, because that's not how all art works yet. It's supposed to suggest things. Well, he doesn't look so grand. He's just sitting on the sculptor's table, not looking very happy either. And he is perfect silver. You can see yourself in him. And I think it's a reflection around how our, and he's much bigger than life, he's huge. And I think it's a reflection about how what our image of Cook tells us more about ourselves than it does about Cook. That's what I thought anyway. It's a fabulous piece of work. And finally for today, just to show you that Captain Cook is very up to date, the Captain Cook Society, one of their people had a special COVID mask made with Captain Cook on it. I know you need one. You definitely need one. Now, I do have my Captain Cook hat, and I have my BBC hat. You've got to have the right hat, or you can't give Agagetti on classes, you know. But that's for another day. Do you have questions on that, which is the first bit? Okay, so I've left you with plenty of things to do. First of all, if you haven't read it, you've got to read it. Secondly, I recommended two videos and an article. And of course, otherwise, it depends how much time you have. But if you go and look on my blog, there are 62 suggestions. I know you don't have much time, yeah? I'm like all the other teachers. I think my subject is the only important one. Although, I'm told that there are nice people who study literature. I'm prepared to believe it. So you have plenty to do, and you can find more on your blog if you need it. But, you know, I know that the... il est normal que les écrits soient prioritaires pour l'instant, hein, parce que sans les écrits, vous ne ferez pas d'oral. Okay, send me an email if you have any problems. I'm probably going to see some of you in an hour's time anyway, yeah? I left an hour because I need an hour to rest after that. Okay, that's what it's like being old. So don't laugh. You will find out later. Okay, so see you later, perhaps, perhaps you have other things to do. Otherwise, see you next week. I'm now going to click on this button, and you're all going to disappear.